Don was at the first church I ever got to work with. One of his sons was my roommate in college. So I've known him, but he's a great fellow. Y'all blessed to have him here. I don't know if he was scared of his wife or what, but I talked to him. I had to go meet him. He didn't say, "Hey, come meet my wife." I didn't know whether he thought he might turn me off when I let him know.
Oh, got it. Hey, yeah, I hear me a little better now. I'm going to talk to you about a lot of things tonight. I want to talk to you a little bit in the beginning just to give you some heads up about things. When I'm speaking to you tonight about protecting our future, I've been in youth ministry now altogether about 21, 22 years. I didn't grow up with a youth minister. I didn't know what that was. Then one summer I decided, hey, I think I'll go be an intern. I don't know what that is. And then I ended up being at Canal Heights in Demopolis, Alabama with a guy like Don Lowe. He's one of the greatest men I've ever met. Just an awesome, awesome fellow. Great story. In my tenure, like I said, I've been in ministry that long. Just at Beltline alone, I've been there 19 years. And in those 19 years, I've graduated probably about 500 students. And a couple of years ago, I went back and looked and tried to just looking at everyone, talking to some families, talking to different people, if I couldn't get in touch with them, to find out, you know, where these students were, if they were still involved in the church, if they were not. The good thing I found out was, and it's going to sound even terrible when I say it, but the good thing I found out was that about 60%, actually at that time it was about 67% of the kids that had been in our youth group were still faithful. But what about the 33? You know, for us to lose any of our teenagers would just be detrimental. It would be terrible. You know, I can remember my wife talking about her mother when she went to college. We both went to Faulkner. When she went to college, her mother would call her on Sunday. And she would never say, "Hey, baby, did you get up and go to church today?" She would just call and talk to her, "How's things going?" and all that. And my wife always said she knew, or I knew my mom was going to call. And I didn't want to have to tell her that I didn't go. When we begin to talk about these things, I'm very, very passionate about it. I've been on a roller coaster with ministry. I've sat in a courtroom beside a crying mom while their son was being arraigned by the judge for a drug possession. I've sat in my office with a teenage girl who was both upset and relieved that she just miscarried as a teenager. I've been in a situation where I've had to be with teenagers who lost a dad too early. I've been around teenagers that, well, one night I just got through refereeing basketball and I got a call from the principal at one of the local high schools, told me there had been a car wreck. Never can talk about it without getting a little choked up. And that one of our teenagers was killed in a car wreck. So when I look around and I think about teenagers, I'm very, very passionate about it. And my passion sometimes comes across as being a little too coarse. But tonight, as we go through this, I want you to think a few things. A few years ago, I did a study from this book called Sticky Faith. In Sticky Faith, there was a statement in there that said, "The Board of National Association of Evangelicals, which is an umbrella group representing 60 denominations and dozens of ministries, has passed a resolution deploring the epidemic of young people leaving the evangelical church." You know, they talked about this epidemic proportion. Now, teenagers in the room, you know, I've asked you in here tonight for two reasons. One, I'll tell you in just a minute, and the one I'll come back to and talk to you in the end. Just because you hear people say teenagers are leaving the church doesn't give you a scapegoat to do it. We want you to be part of the church because we realize and we understand that souls are at stake. You know, when I'm talking tonight and this topic that I was given, man, I thought, awesome. There's not a lot of times I get to go speak about a topic like this. Sometimes it's just maybe textual study or maybe some theme, but this I could talk about all night long. But for y'all's sake, I'm not going to do that. My grandmother, as I was growing up, I would go to church with her a lot. And she would say the preacher's job is to stand up, speak up, sit down, and shut up. And so I said, yes, ma'am. And so that was what we would do. So now I'm going to do something, because when I tell you that 70% of the teenagers are leaving the church, I can throw a number at you. But let me do something. If you are a teenager in this room, I'm going to get you to come stand with me just a minute. Don't worry, you're not going to have to do anything but stand and look pretty, look cute, whatever you decide to do. If you're a teenager, come up here and stand with me just a minute. All right. All right, here we go. Okay, now, y'all probably heard most of what I was saying anyway. I tried to cover the mic up, but it didn't work. All right, I want you to look at these bright, vibrant young people here. Where are all the girls at? Oh, there's another one over there. Bless y'all's heart, haven't put up with them. Man, boys are ugly, aren't they? Now, I'm going to tell you, which one of these is worth losing? I just want you to think about it for just a minute. Which one of these is worth losing? Now, we're not voting them off the island, okay? Some of you are going, oh, yeah, I could. No. But I want you to think about it this way. Get a good look at these faces, okay? Because if statistics are true, then what that means is, I'm going to let you guys stay right here. You are the good guys. The rest of y'all can just leave. No, go that way, right out the back door. Now, as you saw them walk out that back door, you never know when it's the last time. Because so often, just like when we read about the parable of the sower, they get entangled by the things of the world. And you never know. I'm always bothered by that. I did that little example one other time. I don't know these kids, but I still don't like it. I don't like seeing them leave. I don't like the realization that there's a possibility they're going to leave and they're not coming back. Statistics will also tell you that at least 30% of those that do leave the church come back when they're in their mid to late 20s. Okay, thanks. I know it's awkward standing there, so I appreciate that. But I want you to let those faces sink in for just a minute. That if those things are true, hey, if y'all can hear me out there in the back, y'all can come back in. Love y'all. Hey, they weren't paying attention. Awesome. Thanks, guys. So when we look at this, you know, there's a few things I'm going to talk to you about tonight. Go ahead and turn over to Daniel chapter 1. Daniel chapter 1. You know, I read this quote somewhere one time where it said, unless commitment is made, there are only promises and hopes, but no plans. Why are we playing a hoping game? I've got three children he just talked about. All these kids that go through our youth group at Beltline, they're mine. I claim them too. Why are we hoping? All too often what we do is we hear this statistic about teenagers leaving the church when they go off to college, and we shake our head with disappointment, but yet we don't change anything that we do. We don't change anything. We hope they go to heaven. We hope they stay with the church. We hope. Well, what is hoping actually going to gain? Nothing. We've got to put forth some effort. Number one thing we'll talk about tonight is commitment. There's got to be a commitment, not only from you teenagers, but from parents, grandparents, and every adult sitting in this room. Nobody gets off the hook tonight. You saw those kids, and you know what has never failed? No one stands up to stop them. And I know you think, I didn't know we were supposed to. If I'd have known that they were leaving, I'd have said something. Or if I'd We're telling you now, it's happening. You hear it all the time, but ask yourself, not the person on your left, not the person on the right, ask yourself, what are you doing? You go look in that book that I mentioned a minute ago from Sticky Faith. It talks about if you can get five adults, just five, to take some sort of interest in that teenager, if they can make five relationships, it was a huge indicator in helping them to remain faithful. Why? Could be because they got to see faith lived out from other adults at the church, not just mom and dad. Maybe they had other influences on them that were going to check up on them down the road. But whatever it is, I need a commitment from you tonight that you are going to do whatever is within your power to change that. It doesn't matter if you're 22. It doesn't matter if you're 103 like John Harris. It doesn't matter. You all have a job and a role to play in this. We start with commitment. Look at Daniel chapter 1. We look at this story, and it's such a fantastic story. One of my favorites for so many reasons. We look at this story, and we get down in verse 3 and 4. It said that the king instructed Ashpenaz, the master of the eunuchs, to bring some children of Israel and some of the king's descendants and some of the nobles, young men in whom there was no blemish, but good-looking, gifted men. It talked about, hey, I want you to go get all these guys, and I want you to bring them in. And we're going to give them the best education they can. We're going to clothe them. We're going to feed them. We're going to take care of them. Okay? And then they're going to enter in. The best of those, we're going to enter into the king's court. Okay? You follow that. Now, we see what happens here in this story. If you remember, it says in verse 8, it said, Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore, he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Now, you know the story goes that they were allowed to do this, and they were eating only vegetables and water. And at the end of the testing period, you saw that they were actually healthier and leaner than all the other people. We see that as an answer from God. But here's what I want to point out, and I want to ask you this question. When these guys walk into this court, when they're brought in, history will tell us that they were in early, maybe 13 to 15 range. Are you going to sit there and tell me that they were taught a commitment like Daniel just said, he purposed in his heart, that they were taught through that education system? What do you think? No, I don't think so. Where do you think it came from? What? He obviously had some parents in his life that taught him from a young age. You know, adolescent psychology will tell you that by the age of 5, a child's personality traits have already been formed. Okay? Y'all know the truth of that. You look at me, I'm a little bit different than I was when I was 5 years old. I was kind of quiet. Can y'all believe that? That's a shocker. But they'll say that. So I look at this and I go, this guy had to have somebody to teach him. You know, when I look at it, I hear all the time, don't shoot me until I finish my statement. You know, you have these children's worship training classes or children's church at different places. I'm not here to discuss whether it's right or whether it's wrong. But I've heard this argument so many times. Well, they're so young, they're really not getting anything out of the lesson, or they're not getting anything out of the worship. Well, let me tell you, Judd, when he was 2 years old, two years old, he always stayed in the auditorium. You know, we trained them young. You know the song, There Was a Wise King, marched him up the hill, when you're up, you're up, when you're done. That's what my wife looked like half the time. You know, taking our kids in and out of trying to, okay, we're not going to act that way. I would do the same thing. It's like we would tag, all right, tag, you're it. We'd take them out. 2 years old, a friend of mine had come forward and needed prayers. And he was sitting kind of like sitting on the right side of the pew, and I'm sitting back here. So I stand up, and I go up, and I'm going to go sit by him. I have Judd in my arm, 2 years old. I have Judd in my arm. I sit down on that front pew, and I don't know what happened. But parents, you know the inhale that a little child does when he's about to scream? You know what I'm talking about. You know, it's a, and my hand go, whoop. I didn't know what was happening. It's just all of a sudden I sat down, and he starts going crazy. So I get up. My wife's watching on the monitor. She was in the nursery. I get up and I walk out the back door and I'm looking at her and I'm going, I have no idea what's going on. I give her to her. I go back in and I sit down by my friend that had come forward. Well, afterwards, I see my wife. I was like, Rachel, what was that all about? And she looked at me and she almost can't stop laughing. She said, all Judd kept saying over and over is, I don't want to be baptized. I don't want to be baptized. So you look at it at 2 years old. He's already learned that when someone comes down here at 2 years old, but yet we're going to have this idea that my kid's too young to learn anything? Give me a break. We see that all the time. And we say, oh, they're too young to learn this. They're too young. No, they're not. They are learning and watching everything that we do. It sank in really good with me one time. We always do it like this flag, youth group flag football tournament. And the team I was playing with, we lost. And afterwards, I went and hugged everybody on the other team. And, you know, we went home. And I didn't think another thing about it. The very next week, one of my sons was playing in a little tournament they do at school. And he is super competitive. He lost in that game. And then I watched. Guess what he did? He went and hugged everybody on that other team. And I asked him later, I said, Judd, why'd you do that? He said, because I saw you do it last Saturday. And I think, we're missing the boat if we think that we can wait later in life and then try to teach them something. When we think about commitment, Daniel had that in his life. It is obvious because he already said, no, I'm not doing it. Y'all watch enough movies like I have, you know what happens when you tell a king no, right? Yeah, you don't live very long. But this young man said, no, I'm not going to do it. Second thing you see about Daniel, you turn over to Daniel chapter 6. His commitment was unwavering. You know, in this situation, we know about Daniel, and we know about the story about where those guys, they were kind of jealous of his position and his influence on the king, and so they had the king issue a decree. And that decree was that no petition to be made to anyone else but the king. And so then they hid and they waited and they watched. And then in verse 10 it says this, it says, he went and he prayed up on the rooftop as was his custom since the early days. You see, Daniel's commitment did not change because the rules of the game changed. They didn't change because of circumstance, and they didn't change because of the day of the week. You know, I think about this right here. Moms, dads, I think about this, and I think about how many souls are being led astray because we think we should play ball on Sunday instead of worshiping. As was a custom. Because so many times we think, well, I don't have a choice. Well, let me tell you, I've got 3 kids that have played travel ball. We don't miss worship. We don't, oh, let's go to the early worship so we can still go play. We don't play on Sunday and Wednesday. And they know that and they understand that. And it's never an issue. Now, I need you to understand, I'm all about sports. I love it. My middle son, we was talking about earlier, my middle son this year batted 700, struck out one time, and had 8 home runs. So we love baseball. My oldest son is a pitcher for the Austin High School. We love it. But you know what this can't do? It can take you all over the world if you're good enough. But it cannot save your soul. And I want you to keep thinking about this number, and I'm going to reveal it in just a minute. The number 936. I want you to think about that number, 936. Because when we look at this, what's changed? Does the circumstance change? Oh, well, and we kind of wish it away. But what kind of commitment do we show our children if God is first priority, but yet we go play ball? I'm telling you, the world is watching. We even had a kid that was on our team last year. I'm blessed with Judd's team because 6 of the 10 boys that play on that team, we go to church with. So it's never an issue playing on Sunday because we're all in agreement. But we had a kid that was on our team last year quit and went and played with another team because he didn't like we didn't play on Sunday. And he hated that we dictated that all the time. Mom and Dad did too. But you see, the world is watching us. Another thing we think about, Daniel, is how commitment is rewarding. Commitment is rewarding. We look in Daniel 6:28. That very end of that chapter, we see that the king went back to the lion's den, pulled Daniel out of it, threw those other people in, said the lions tore him up before they hit the bottom of the den. I think that's a little crazy to think about, but it says that there, so it's neat. And it goes on and talks about in verse 28, it said, so then Daniel prospered. Prospered. Man, that word's huge. That word is huge for us to think about if we as adults will show commitment to everybody around us. I'll never, ever forget a kid one time. I was working a summer camp, and we were talking, and I made the statement, well, I couldn't do that. I have to go to church on Sunday. And he looked at me and said, my daddy said, we don't have to go to church. I looked at him. I was like, boy, I know your daddy. He didn't say that. And then after I looked at him real weird for a minute, he said, my daddy says we get to. You see what that kid's been taught? Being taught that it's a privilege to go before our Creator as a body of Christ and worship. It's so important for us to make that investment. Let's move on. Second thing I want you to do is to be involved in your child's life. Involvement is so important. The idea here says be involved. Your child's future depends on it. Child's future depends on it. Did you know that in Japan, if a child misses school, if he's sick and has to stay home, the parent takes off work and goes to sit in their spot. And then they go home and teach them what they missed that day. You see, that's the kind of parental accountability we need in this country. We want our education system to be better. We need some accountability. Now, how many of you want to go sit back in eighth grade math? Anybody? Takers? Parents? No? No. No, I wouldn't want to sit back in there either. But that's the attitude, is that kind of parent involvement takes place. They go so that they make sure that their child doesn't miss anything. Go back to commitment just a minute. Where's our commitment to godly learning? Parents, ask yourself this question right now. And grandparents, if you got a grandkid here, you're in this boat. When was the last time you asked your kid what they talked about in Bible class? When was the last time that happened? Better yet, who do I want to pick on? Can I pick on a parent? What parent can I pick on? Give me a good one to pick on.
Graduated?
No, not at all. Yeah, got him. All right.
Oh, God.
Who taught your kids Bible class Sunday morning?
Sorry. I don't know. Golly.
All right. I just kind of figured what you'd say. Sorry, no offense. But think about it. We are so concerned with our education system, but yet we're not concerned with our godly learning. We're so concerned with, did they get that research paper turned in? You better have. You stayed up till midnight doing it. You know, look, God, I understand that too. My oldest son, he almost had to come to Jesus meeting, and I mean meeting Jesus. You know what I'm saying? The boy had 3 zeros. He did the homework, but didn't turn it in. Are you kidding me? I about lost my mind. Smart kid. Y'all know, y'all feel me? You know what I'm saying? Kid ended the school year with a 4.25 grade point average. Because I'm going, oh, are you kidding me? You're so smart. Why? Why are we not this concerned with what they're learning in Bible class? Why are we not concerned with that? This guy that's y'all's youth minister here, man, make him a resource. I've been in youth ministry, I told you, a long time. You know how many times I've ever had a parent ask me about something they were teaching in Bible class? I can think of one time, and they were offended by something that I said. I was talking about, well, did Isaiah prophesy, you honor me with your lips, but your heart's far from me. And I made the statement that just because you come sitting in a pew doesn't mean anything if you're not living the life elsewhere. Well, the daughter was mad because I said it didn't mean anything to sit in the pew. The dad come and talked to me, and we stood there and we had a Bible study together. Actually, I just said, here's what the Bible says. That's what we were talking about. So when was the last time you did that? Because when you do that, you are telling them that what they are learning matters. You know, when we talk about this idea of involvement, the most wonderful organization and annoying organization is the PTA. So I put these three things in PTA so maybe you can remember them. Number one, you look at it. When you talk about your perseverance, you talk about involvement. Number one is perseverance through tough times. Galatians 6 and verse 9 talks about to not grow weary doing good, because in due time you'll reap what you'll sow. You see, can I get a weary amen when I say it's tough to be a parent? Thank you. Thank you. Because you guys don't come with instructions. And if you're the oldest, you're the guinea pig. We try to figure out what works and what doesn't. But you know, there's a lot of tough times that take place. I had a parent call me one time. Wanted to come talk to me about her son. She said, and she came in, sat down, she said, and she just burst into tears. She said, Scott, I think my son's gay. I said, okay, why do you think that? She said, well, I went and, let me pause just a minute. I taught a parenting class one night, and I talked about the importance of internet safety on that Wednesday night, about how you need to be aware of these things. You know, people used to put TV Guardian on their TV and they won't let their kids go watch rated R movies, but then they do nothing on the computer, which is way more dangerous than either of the other two. So I talked about that on Wednesday night. The next Sunday, I had so many parents in an uproar. They were so upset. There were three sets of families, three parents that went home and started downloading what's called Covenant Eyes. If you've ever heard of Covenant Eyes, Covenant Eyes is a program that you can put on your computer, you can put it on your smartphone, your kid's smartphone, and then if it goes to any kind of website that is adult content, you'll immediately get an email. So they're in the process of setting this up, and they discovered all this. This mom was one of them. And she said, well, she said, when I went home and after your Bible class, I went and looked, and there was actually gay porn on the computer. And so I said, okay. I said, I'll talk to him. So I let it go for a few weeks. I didn't immediately talk to him. And there was method in the madness. I waited for a while. And then it was me and him sitting in my office one day. And I said, all right. I said, I got to ask you. I've learned one thing in my many years. There's no good way to ask a tough question. So I was like, you struggling with homosexuality? And he sat back and looked at me. And his head sank for a minute, and he went, no. I said, well, tell me about this that was on the computer. He said, you know, I was just so upset with my dad that I knew that the thing that would hurt him the most is if he thought I was gay. How do you parent through stuff like that? You don't quit. You don't give up. You know, I've engaged so many different styles of parenting over the years that are not all 100% foolproof. But we don't quit. We don't quit, people. When time gets tough, I've seen so many parents that used to say, I used to fight that battle, but I got so tired of fighting it that I just stopped fighting it. One of them, whether or not their child went to church or not, whether or not they went to Bible class. I had a parent sit in my office one day and talking about their daughter who was 16, who had a job at McDonald's, had a car, had a cell phone. And she said, I just can't figure out how to get her to go to church. I went, sounds pretty easy to me. I mean, are you paying for that car? Yeah, I'm paying for that car. Are you paying for that cell phone? Yeah, I'm paying for that cell phone. And you can't figure this out? She just said, I just wish I was as tough as you are. I just wish I was brave enough to do that. Just got tired of fighting. Adults, we don't get to get tired of fighting. So often we think it's so rough those first couple of weeks we brought the kid home from the hospital. You know, I remember walking out with that first kid. My wife looked at me and went, "What have we done?" And then you get home that first couple of nights and you wonder where that nurse is that's going to walk in and take the baby so you can sleep a while. They're not around, baby. It's just me and you. Now, you think that's tired, but it's not. The tired's when you fight through stuff like this. The tired's when your son is involved in something that breaks your heart. But you see, we don't get to give up. Not only that, but you know, we talk about involvement. We got to think about time for our loved ones. And I'm going to make this statement, and I've made it 100 times, and I completely 100% agree, I believe it's true. You might have a teenager that's going to argue with me, but I'm going to tell you the truth. I've not met a teenager yet who will take money over your time. Now, they're going to fight with you, and they're going to act like that's true, but I'm going to tell you it's not. They would never choose your money over your time. And some of these moms and dads, I have to pick on you a little bit because in our society, it's typically the dad's the one who's the main money maker. Don't believe the lie that you have to provide a level of living that takes you away from your family. Don't believe it. When we look at this text about fathers, provoke not your sons. You know, so many times I think we can provoke them by the things that we don't do just as much as the things that we do. My oldest son, man, he and I butt heads. He's a great kid, I'm going to tell y'all that. But man, we butt heads. But it's a rarity for him to ever have a game, for him to ever have... When he was in band, he was in the band for a while. I'm not a band guy. Just don't care for it. That's just me. No offense to people. I was there every step. What would you be willing to do for your child? Anything that was asked, right? Now, I'm going to go out on a limb just because this place is probably not much different than anywhere else. How many times have you ever been asked to teach a Bible class and the immediate response is, oh, that's just not my thing. That's just not my thing. Oh, are you in charge of teachers? I got that chuckle there. But oh, that's not my thing. That's not my thing. So you're going to tell me it's not your thing to spend teaching God's Word in front of your children. Because I'm willing to bet if you won't do it in a Bible class setting, you don't do it at home either. And I'm going to tell you, it's huge what we do with our time with our kids. That time is so important. All right, last one there. That letter A stands for attitudes for success. We have got to redefine what success is. Matthew 16:26 says, "What profit a man if he gain the whole world and lose his soul?" If I told you that your son could be an elder in the church one day, or he could be a chemical engineer and make 6 figures every year, which one would you choose? Now, it doesn't have to be one or the other. The elders at Beltline, man, they're sharp. We've got one's a surgeon, one's an anesthesiologist. We've got three others that are engineers. So it doesn't have to be either or, but for some reason, we think that it does. You know, my oldest son pitches, you know, and so he has a guy that he goes to and works with, and I pay for him to go work and have these pitching lessons. But then, am I willing to put forth extra time, money, and effort for them to grow spiritually? You know, lads to leaders, like it or love it, hate it or don't, whatever, not the discussion. But so many people will say, it just costs too much to go up there and stay for a week. It just costs too much. And I'm sitting here thinking, wait a minute. You get to go be in under a roof with 10,000 Christians. You're getting to teach them skills. Well, Scott, I can teach them somewhere else. You're right, you can. But you're putting them in situations where they're seeing other people their age and you just can't afford it. Yeah, see, I could, and this is the excuse I got one time. Yeah, I could go spend a whole week at the beach for that money. Okay, that's fine. But think about what takes place there. My son, my oldest son for sure, because he's more social. He knows so many kids that go to this church and that church from this state and that state because he goes there. He's going to end up going to a Christian college and saying, oh yeah, I remember being against you and Last Leader. And he's going to know that there's a greater world out there, because sometimes, maybe like it is here in Cleveland, Tennessee, I don't know. They need to realize that there's a bigger church world out there. There's a bigger family than what we see. We'll move on. Last thing we'll talk about is suffer the pain of discipline or suffer the pain of regret. You know, when I think about discipline, I think about Eli. If you go back to 1 Samuel chapters 1 and 2, you're going to read about Eli. You remember, Eli was a priest, and he had two sons, Hophni and Phinehas. And those two sons were wicked. They were performing sexual acts in the temple with some of the people that served in the temple. They were taking their choice meats and doing all that. The people told Eli. God told Eli. And what did Eli do? Do y'all remember? Nothing. Nothing. Parents, listen up. If someone, good advice, trust me. If someone comes to you and says, your son or your daughter is doing this, or I've heard that your son or your daughter is doing this, don't beat up the messenger. Because I'm going to tell you, I've been there. And I've been there deciding, okay, do I come and say something with what I know, or do I not? And I've had it play out both ways. But you know what nervous angst builds up when you decide, do I say something or do I not? But then you step across that line and you decide to go talk to someone. Listen, his sons were lost. We don't want to lose our sons. It is not about, hey, we want my kid to be better than your kid, so I'm pointing out that your kid has a flaw. It's not what it's about. It's about realizing that we're a church family. And you know, you hear that it takes a village to raise a child. No, it takes a church to raise a child. You know, when someone comes and tells me my son or my daughter did this, you know what my philosophy is? They're guilty until proven innocent. You know, you've heard it the other way. Innocent until proven guilty? Not in my world. They did it, they did it. Or at least they gave that perception. When you look at this story of Eli, several things I want you to know. Number one, disciplining our children is an act of obedience to the Lord. You say, Scott, where's that come from? Look at 1 Samuel chapter 2 and verse 29. God is speaking to Eli and he says, why do you kick at my sacrifice and my offering which I have commanded in my dwelling place, and honor your sons more than me, to make yourselves fat with the best of all the offering as in Israel, my people? You know, you look at that, he's basically saying, why are you honoring your sons over me? You see, because it's like this, leniency is not love, it's idolatry. It's putting our desire to be liked by our children ahead of our responsibilities as a parent. I've seen so many parents who try to be the friend instead of the parent. They got enough friends, people. They do. If they've got one friend, they've got too many. Your job is to be the parent. Second thing you see there is discipline. For their behavior to change, it's got to cost them more than it costs you. And in doing that, you'll have to understand that teaching your kid that there's a consequence for every action, sometimes you're going to have to let them deal with sleep in the bed they just made. My son, my wife wouldn't let me because I wanted to call the teacher and say, I don't care if he tries to turn it in. Don't take it. He's got to learn. We didn't bail him out. Said, look, if you're going to fix this, it's your job. Now, he didn't get to watch TV or play Fortnite for a long time. Yeah, y'all know Fortnite, don't y'all? Yeah, y'all do. Yeah, he didn't get to play that. Some of y'all older people are going, what? What? No. All right. Let me bring it to a close here. 936. Anybody figure out what that is? That's the number of weeks you have with your child before they graduate. You've got a teenager, that's less than half now. And we go back and we talk about playing ball on the weekend, on Sunday. Well, it's just one Sunday. How do you know that's not the Sunday they hear something that changes their life forever? You remember that lesson, don't you? There's one lesson that you'll never get out of your head. I'll never forget Lonnie Jones at CYC talking about the story of Esther. You hear those things, and who's to know? Because guys, after this 9:36, they're gone. And our influence is over to an extent. 936. When I think about this number, I think about all the things that I've seen over my years. And I've seen some stuff, people. You'd be hard-pressed to just dream up a situation I've not been in. I've been with parents when I've had to report a sexual abuse situation multiple times. I've been in situations where, you know, I've gone and, you know, a kid, I've been in all these things. And guys, we only get one shot. Why are we not going to give it our best shot? Why are we going to sit by and just make excuses for this and for that? 936. Now, we got a few minutes left here. Q&A. Maybe I've not pinned your ears back too much that you'll actually talk to me now. What kind of questions that might you have about any of the things that I've said tonight or even anything else? I mean, I don't have all the answers, but man, I've got a lot of them just because I've seen a lot. Yes, sir.
What form of discipline do you think works best on children once they get past those very early years?
In every situation, you've got to find what costs them the most. Sorry, guys. For a lot of them, it's going to be their cell phones. Because in doing that, they're cut off from the world. And to their world, to be social is so important. Okay? And for that, my son, that's not him. I can take his phone, he don't care. I mean, he just, yeah, whatever, I'll just talk to people at school. You know, so you've got to figure out, you know, when you look at that discipline, it's got to cost them more than it costs you. You know, my wife, we talk about, you know, you talk about in Japan, I told that story a minute ago. My father-in-law, my wife, when she was in high school, she was kept being tardy for class. And her daddy told her that, all right, next time you're tardy, I'm going to come to school and walk you to class. She wasn't tardy no more. My oldest, Jake, when he was in seventh grade, he was in a math class with older kids. And in this math class, it was one of my wife's friends that taught right next door. And he's very talkative. Y'all look at me, you're shocked. He's very talkative. And so he got in trouble, and I went up there on that Friday. This was MLK weekend. And I went up there on that Friday. It's like, this is not acceptable. We'll fix this on Tuesday. And I left it. I went in on Tuesday. I got there before hit that class, particular math class started. I sat in the seat. I walked in, looked at the teacher. I said, where does he sit? And she said, he's right there. I sat right in the seat behind him. He walked in. And in fact, there was about four different kids in our youth group that were in that same class. Did none of them talk that day. But you see, it's got to cost them something. In that situation, my goal was not to embarrass him. My goal was not to hurt him. My goal was to get his attention to say, look, this is not acceptable. And I'm here to make sure that happens. I'm not here to win a popularity contest with you. So that's going to be different for every individual. And that's the job of a parent to know their kid enough to know, okay, this is what they need to do. And as bad as I even hate to throw this out, but you know what would hurt my son the most? If he didn't get to go on the next youth group activity. That's what would hurt him the most. That's what would get his attention the most. Now, would I encourage that? If that's all it took, then that's what you got to do. Because those youth group activities are extra for them to grow and learn, but they're not taking away from his worship and his opportunity to learn more about God. All right, any other questions? What we got? Anything?
What about those that don't have children?
Those that don't have children. I want you to go back. Do what? Yeah. Be number one, be one of the five. But I want you to go back and think about it. Let me pull it up real quick. I want you to go back and think about this for a minute. When you think about what can I do, you can be one of the five, number one. Number two, at Beltline, I saw this as a problem, so I set up a mentor kind of program. I get all of our adults who are interested in signing up, they will mentor a student for the year. They might go to their ball games. They might go, my son's mentor this year, he would pick him up about every other week, take him to Chick-fil-A, which is basically saying, here's $1 million. Because my son loves Chick-fil-A. You know, if he could eat anything the rest of his life, that's what it would be. And he would go and they would sit. And the beauty of that is they would have spiritual conversations. So he's hearing it for someone else. Now, parents, I want you to look around and start picking people out. Say, hey, would you just, you know, spend some time talking to my son? Oh, well, sure, is he in trouble? What did he do? No, it's not about that. It's about, hey, here's another man, here's another woman in our congregation that loves God and wants you to love God too. So that's one of the biggest things you can do is find a way to be involved in that. What else? What'd you say? Anybody else? Anybody? Yes, sir.
About how kids that are, you know, they tend to originally be shy and open up.
The biggest foundational thing in our youth group is investment. Investment. You've heard the old saying of people don't know how much care how much you know till they know how much you care. But look, you've got to have a time investment. You know, with the kids in our youth group, I've got one kid that where's the youth minister go? Where'd he at? Where's he hiding? Was he teaching a class somewhere? Where'd he go? Oh, he bugged out on me. Youth ministers often, parents, be careful with this because I'm gonna shoot you straight. Youth ministers don't have favorites. We don't. And so many parents buy into that lie so that they can, because their kid doesn't want to go. I had a parent one time that was like, yeah, my kid, nobody talks to him when he's there, and he just doesn't feel like he fits in. And when she said that, the associate that works with me, he and I went, what? She said, nobody talks to him. Like, whoa, 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 whoa. We don't know what story you're hearing, but when he's there, every time he's the life of the party. He's the one that everybody wants to talk to. He's the one that everybody cuts up with. So I don't know where this is coming other than he's trying to talk you out of going to worship. He's trying to talk you out of going to be part of this and part of that. So when we think about investment, we don't have favorites. We just have people who allow us into their lives. And that can only be done through investment. And it takes time to invest in these. You know, I've got a kid, I tell you this, I've got a kid in my youth group now. His dad's in prison. His mom lives in a different state and cannot come back to this state because if she does, she'll be arrested and go to prison. I know all this stuff about him, and he and I have never had that conversation because I picked it up from different people that he has confided in. I don't have to be the one to go talk to him about that. If he already has people who are talking to him, I just have to be the guy that can be open to him. So the only way you can get those shy people to open up, adult or teenager, is through time. You've got to be willing to invest the time. And it might be weeks, it might be months, it might be years. But it does take time. What else? Anything? Well, all right. You know, in this time together, I've kind of been around the world. I pointed some stuff out. You know, the Bible, all you need to know about parenting is in the Bible. Every bit of it's in there. Go back to the second reason, if anybody was hanging on to that. You know the second reason I asked these teenagers to be in here? You ain't going to believe this. Moms, dads, you're not going to believe this. But a lot of them desire what I just said. When I first moved to Decatur, I taught at a very poor school. I was around, it was 99% free and reduced lunch. And it was kind of a tough school. But the one constant I always saw was even with the toughest kid that always got in trouble, I never had problems with him. Because I was very stern. I drew the line and said, don't cross it. And when they crossed it, I held them accountable. These kids, I've had some, Rashad. Rashad's been in prison a couple of times. But if Rashad were to see me now, he would walk up, he would hug me. Hey, Coach Bailey, man, I missed you. It's good to see you. Discipline shows love. These teenagers now are going to watch and see if you're willing to hold them to hold, see if you're going to do any of these things that I talked to you about tonight. Yeah, they're going to fight with you, but that's because teenagers want to save face too, don't they? But I can tell you, they're going to sit back and they're going to wait and see if you're willing to step up and do some of these things, because they're going to wonder how much their soul is worth in your eyes. As a parent, you make a lot of mistakes. Believe me, I know. I've made some dumb mistakes as a parent. And it ain't going to stop today, unfortunately. But we've got to honor God, because remember, those children are a gift from God. Isn't that what the Scriptures teach us? They're a gift. Are we going to return that gift to God like He intended us to? Now, I don't know if I've offended you or got on your nerves, or maybe I've motivated you a little bit, because we only get one shot. We're going to sing this song of invitation here in just a moment. And, you know, maybe it takes you as a parent. I'm going to be honest. Maybe it takes you as a parent coming down here and just saying, you know, I think I've struggled. And before my child, I want them to see me come here and ask for prayer so that they can understand that I don't make all the right decisions, but I do want what's best for them. Even with all the mistakes that I've made, you can make it right between you and God. You can make it right between you and that person, you and your children, because they're watching. How often is it that you see teenagers come down here for prayers? My guess is not very much. You know why that is? Because they think you must have done something really, really bad if you go down there. Maybe they don't see us as adults being transparent enough to realize, hey, I messed up. Sorry, I messed up. But we'll have this time for you. You know, we can do this. I want to offer the prayers for different things. I want you to think about it if you need prayers. Number one, if you have an individual, if you've messed up, you know, in any way in your life, you know, something that you sinned against God, you can have an opportunity to make that right. Maybe you as a parent, if you need to, in front of your child, in front of this church, say, look, I want to be a better parent. I've messed up. I've forgotten my priorities, and I need God to help me. And then I want to throw this third one in there. Proverbs 22 and verse 6 says, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it. Man, that causes a lot of heartache, doesn't it? Because you and I both know that probably in the sound of my voice right now, there's parents who have kids who are not faithful. And they wonder, wait, you said, but the Scripture said if I trained them right, they would. You know, I can't answer that. But when we sing this song, if you want to come down and we can name them in prayer, then we'd be glad to do that also. Just name them in prayer and pray for them at this time, because, you know, prayer of a righteous man avails much. You know, we got some righteous men who are going to pray, you know, continue to pray for them. So if we have that, if there's any need that you have, Ryan's going to come as we stand and we sing.